So take two ships. The basic thing about take two ships in comparison to the T1 is that the take two ships take the best qualities of each ship and improve it further specializes the ship in one direction. Now that does give every T2 ship some quite distinct disadvantages because of the specialization, but it also makes them uniquely suited for the purpose they were designed for. There is no I win button in Eve. If you want an advantage, you get a disadvantage as well. All right, let's get started with the Kaldari T2 frigates. First off, I'll start with the assault frigates. That is the Hawk and the Harpy. Assault ships are designed to have high tanking ability and medium to high range DPS for the frigate size hull. They are slower than other frigates, more bulky, but can fit the best tank of any frigate of the race they're from. The Hawk is a missile specialized assault frigate. It relies on the strong shield tank accompanied by its launchers to deal its damage. It does have some problems with its split weapon system layout, and as such, the Hawk isn't very favored by assault frigate pilots. It doesn't do the most DPS. And a tank on a frigate really it isn't enough to really duke it out with any larger ship, but can be very effective in the correct environment. The Harpy, on the other hand, is a railgun or hybrid specialized frigate, and it has a bonus to the range of the hybrid turrets, and as such, the Harpy is very well suited in a sniping role. I believe you can get upwards of 100-120 kilometers range with T2 turrets and spike ammo. It's overall a very nice frigate, and if you don't like the sniping role, you can fit it with blasters and have a fairly large long range for a blaster setup. As such, the Harpy is the most favored Kaldari assault frigate, and probably one of the in the top four of all assault frigates. Next up is the covert ops frigates, that is the Buzzard and the Manticore. The special thing about covert ops frigates is that the thing that sets them apart from other ships is the ability to fit a covert ops cloaking device. That is, this enables the pilot to warp cloaked while active, while the covert ops cloak is active. This is of huge benefit in a scouting capacity, which is the role the Buzzard is designed for. It's designed to scout ahead of the fleet and probing down the enemy, allowing your fleet to warp in the optimum range for the fleet setup. They are small, they are fast, and they are very good at surviving in any space that is both high sec, low sec, and zero space, and wormhole space for that matter. The Manticore, on the other hand, is a stealth bomber, and as the name suggests, it is designed to deal damage. Stealth bombers can fit siege and cruise missiles, and with max skills and damage, you can do upwards of 550 DPS in any of the stealth bombers. This is a huge amount of damage for a frigate-sized ship, and as such, lower skill players will favor these in post-sieging due to the ease of getting into them compared to a battleship and such. And the other thing that stealth bombers and the Manticore can do is drop bombs with a bomb launcher. Bombs are a mix between a smart bomb and a missile. And you fire the bomb, and it is a projectile that a missile that goes directly forward in space and detonates the bomb warhead, dealing a very large amount of DPS. There are four types of damage, one for each race. Then there is a lock breaker bomb that works in the same way as ECM, only as a area of effect device. And then there is a capacitor draining bomb as well. The main thing with the damage amount a bomb deals is based on the signature size of the ship being hit. As such, it is a very bad idea for small ships to activate a micro warp drive while being hit by a bomb. And you will be one-shotted in any frigate if you are hit by a bomb while having a micro warp drive access. Well, you could, if you knew the damaging incoming damage type, fit to survive it, but that wouldn't be a point, really. But so mainly it is... For small ships, it's a matter of can I get out of the blast radius in time, in which case, yes, activate your micro warp drive. If not, don't touch it, and you'll receive less damage. The tactic with the stealth bombers is then grouping up in teams of 7 stealth bombers and releasing all your bombs in one wave, and then warping off, allowing the next group, if you have more groups, to launch the next wave of bombs. In this way, small fleets of 20 to 30 stealth bombers can destroy entire fleets of 1,000 people if they did misread the situation and walk into your trap. Why 7? That is because the amount of HP each bomb has compared to its resists and the damage amount output by the other bomb or other bombs mean that if you detonate more than 7, everyone above 7 will be killed by the first 7 exploding. So a stealth bomb in the right hands can be extremely effective and devastating to an unawares fleet coming against you. Okay, moving on. Next up is the electronic attack, the Kitsune. The Kitsune is an upgraded Griffin with better bonuses, but fills essentially the same role. And as the Griffin, it is a very fragile ship, and it will often see the pilots of any E-War frigate being quickly targeted by the enemy. But it does work well at what it was designed for, using ECM modules to remove the locking ability of enemies. It's just as soon as you don't jam him, you will end up in a port fairly quickly. And as Ellen Einhe pointed out, all the bombs you launch in a fleet of stealth bombers has to be the same damage type. So even if you have to have the fleet that don't have bonuses to the damage output of thermal bombs, for instance, if that is the bomb used, everyone must use them, or the first non-thermal bomb that goes off in a group of thermals will kill all the others, thereby negating the entire effect of the bombing run. And the last frigates are the Interceptors. Interceptors are the pinnacle of the tackling role, and as such they are designed for speed and tackling. Therefore they have bonuses to the reduction in the micro warp drive signature radius when the micro warp drive is activated. This helps interceptor pilots survive much longer due to the reduced signature radius, which allows them to keep micro warp driving and reduce incoming damage by speed. The difference between the two is that one of them is designed in the fleet role, where it has a bonus to the propulsion jamming range. I believe that is the Raptor. Yep. which allows the Raptor to grab enemies at the longer range and stay further from the image yourself, thereby increasing your chances of survival even further. The Crow, on the other hand, is designed for PvP or direct damage output, and as such is more of a 1v1 type ship designed to dogfighting, designed for dogfighting with other interceptors and frigates. I don't have too much experience with the Crow myself, not since the speed nerf in 2007, but I don't believe the missile interceptors are that preferred. I'd much rather be in a Tyrannus or one of the Mimitar interceptors instead than the Crow. But the Raptor, all the fleet interceptors like the Raptor work equally well in that role. As I said, Yakumi, I'm not sure since I don't fly it regularly about the how good the rockets have made the Crow. But being rockets, that forces you into a very close range fight also. Moving on, we get to the destroyer upgrade, the Flagcatcher Interdictor. Interdictors are, well, aside from being an upgraded destroyer, they are designed with the role of deploying warp disruption probes. In 00 space, you can deploy these probes, which project a bubble of 20 kilometers, wherein no one can initiate warp. This is extremely helpful for forcing fights in 00 space by dropping bubbles on a gate, for instance. So when an enemy jumps in from that gate, they can't immediately escape. So they need to either reapproach the gate to get out or exit the bubble range to be able to warp. So this allows a gate camp to have a much longer time to get your tacklers onto the incoming enemies. Another thing is that you can use these warp disruption bubbles to drag people out of warp in a position they don't want to be. If you have a very linear setup where you have a gate A and gate B, so if you place a warp disruption bubble 100 kilometers behind gate B and someone warps from gate A to gate B, they will not land at the gate but land inside the bubble 100 kilometers from the gate. And this is very commonly used in 00 space for small gate camps to fight or see the incoming enemy. Is it someone we actually can fight and can kill? In which case they will stay with the bubble and destroy the enemy that lands in it. If they see by scanning their local scanner that it is an enemy they can't fight, they will simply warp off to a safe location without having to leave the system by jumping through. In this way, slow enemy targets will take forever to get to the safety of the gate or even being able to warp off because they are inside the warp disruption bubble. So while this is the main role of interdictors, the flycatcher is quite good at killing any frigate-sized ship with a full rack of missile launchers. It does fairly well in the role, better than both the MR and the Kalinti interdictors, but the Mimitar Sabre is by far the best interdictor, easily surpassing all of them in PvP's ability. But for the most part, all interdictors are used for the bopping ability, and as such, you don't need the best kind of interdictor to do your job. Bubble can't be kept indefinitely. It dies after a couple of minutes. I'm not sure on the exact time, but I think the skill at level 4, you can drop a new warp disruption bubble right when the first one is about to expire. So you can permanently, if you keep dropping bubbles. Another way of keeping the bubble off indefinitely is by anchoring mobile warp disruption bubbles. That is an actual module you can anchor in space that keeps the bubble up indefinitely. And the second option is the heavy instinctor that we will be discussing later. This leads us to the Kildare cruisers. First off is the heavy assault ships, more commonly known as HACs. That is the Cerberus and the Eagle. The Cerberus is an upgraded caracal. It has great resistances due to its T2 ability nature and increased output of damage compared to the caracal. The main difference is that the Cerberus can actually be tanked due to the slot layout, whereas a caracal it's much the same, but due to the T2 resistances, it's much more viable to actually tank a Cerberus compared to the caracal. It's a good ship, and it does very well in PvE, and in PvP it can also be of good use. Though the nature of missiles means that it has to be a large ship or a large fleet for the fun to be able to have a great effect in PvP. But in very small gangs, it is also quite viable. The Eagle, on the other hand, is a railgun designed ship. It is an upgrade of the MOA. Which also has had range bonuses. But there isn't really a lot to say, except it's basically an upgraded Harpy. More damage, bit better tank due to T2 resists. And it is extremely good at sniping for the best sniping cruiser of all cruisers. I believe you can get upwards of 180 kilometers range with the Eagle. The downside of railguns is that it is low damage. Yes, I do believe you can put out about 200 to 250 with an Eagle, but it isn't it is very specialized area of expertise, the railgun platforms, and as such they aren't much favored for roaming gangs. But they do have a place in the extreme long range. For instance, you can set up a camp of Eagles in a with a interdictor 100 kilometers from a gate, and you can sit at your spot 150 kilometers from the bubble and just kill any enemy, assuming they aren't too large, of course. But a handful of Eagles can kill almost anything, any one ship. But then it would just as easily fit take another ship and do the same thing. And yes, you can fit a blaster setup, but then why not take the Zealot or the Moonen? Railgun needs love. Next up is the heavy interdictor, the Onyx. As we just talked about the flycatcher in the interdictor role, the difference with a heavy interdictor is that while interdictors are designed to drop a bubble and then get the hell out of dodge, heavy interdictors are designed to stay in the combat zone and project a bubble continuously. So instead of dropping a warp disruption probe, heavy interdictors activate a module that projects a bubble from itself. So if you move the heavy interdictor, the bubble follows where you are. And because you have to be sit inside the bubble that prevents you from warping, heavy interdictors are designed to be extremely good tanks. I believe the Onyx can tank upwards of 800 DPS in an omni-tank setup. But the heavy interdictors also have another joke up their sleeve. If you insert a script into the warp disruption bubble generator, you turn it into a bubble into a single target super warp disruption module. And as such, heavy instigators are the only ships with a targeted warp disruption module that can tackle supercapital ships like supercarriers or titans, which are otherwise immune to all kinds of tackling, aside from a bubble. So while you can catch them in warp disruption bubbles, fitting the script allows the Onyx to at 30 kilometers range instead of 20 kilometers range while tackling, which can be very beneficial since it allows you to sit just at the outer range of a large energy neutralizing module, which is the super capital defense against tackling. It's a good ship, though since I fly mostly in armor fleets when hunting on super capitals, I prefer the Amar version instead of the Onyx. But the Onyx is a very good version of the heavy interdictors. Next up are logistic ships. And the Kaldari version, the Basilisk. While if you look purely on the stats of a Basilisk compared to the other shield logistic ship, the Scimitar of the Nimitar race, the Basilisk does look to be the best choice for shield logistics fleets. But due to the inherent slow speeds of all that Kaldari design, the Scimitar is often preferred in any fleet that needs to move at any kind of speed. But in a more stationary situation in fleet fights, the Basilisk is an extremely good logistic ship. And compared with another Basilisk, you can run all four large remote shield transporters and keep a full capacitor. You will never run out unless you are neutered or your partner is jammed in any way. They do this by having a large discount on the amount of capacitor it requires to transfer capacitor to other ships. And as such, when two of them do this to each other, you get a huge increase in cap compared to what you use to project it. But it's slow, it has low agility, and for those reasons, the Scimitar is often preferred in logistics fleets of shield types. Last but not least are the Recons. And for the Kaldari, that is the Falcon and the Rook. Recons continue from the Covert Ops frigates and combine that with the ability of an electronic attack frigate like Kitsune and produce the recons. As such, the Falcon can warp cloaked and has a very high ECM efficiency. But due to the nerf of ECM range, the Falcon has fallen a bit out of favor, though it is still extremely used in high sec warfare and in small groups of ship fleets. Small fleets, sorry. It is very good at its role, and it's very safe to fly since you can always cloak up and warp off to safety if anything really dangerous comes close to you. The Rook, on the other hand, is designed more in a combat role and combines damage with its ECM abilities. As such, it can't warp cloaked as the Falcon, and this means that a Rook is more prone to being caught by the enemy fleet. I'm not a big fan of the Rook. Combining long range target jamming with DPS really isn't a good combination in my view. You will notice in high sec warfare that as soon as an experienced or veteran group of pilots feel they are under pressure, they will simply lock on their Falcon alts and jam you and run away. Next up are the Kaldari T2 battlecruisers. That is the Nighthawk and the Vulture. One, the Nighthawk is a field command ship, and as such, it is designed with damage in mind. The Nighthawk can put out about the same damage as a Drake, and has a phenomenal tank. Both the passive and active tanks are extremely strong on the Nighthawk. But since the introduction of the Drake, there was a diminished use of the Nighthawk, since the Drake did almost the same thing as well for a fifth of the price. But the Nighthawks, you will still see it both in PvE and PvP situations. Though it is far less used these days as the pre-Drake ages. And the Vulture, on the other hand, is designed as a fleet command ship and is designed to boost the shield abilities of any fleets they join. They boost shield amounts, shield resistances, and so on, with the right leadership skills, of course. They do this by fitting shield warfare modules, which boost the bonuses from leadership skills. And yes, the Vulture is also quite a beast. It has a phenomenal tank. Though, as it's designed with railguns in mind, it doesn't have a very, very good offensive. Anyway, battleships, and that is the Golem and the Widow for the Kaldari Ace. And the Golem is a Marauder-class ship, and is as such is designed with a PvE role in mind. The Golem has a 100% damage bonus to its four launcher slots, and as such it has a damage output as if it had eight launchers. This enables the Golem, as it enables all Marauders, to use the remaining high slots for tractor beams, salvagers, and probe launchers, which makes the Marauders uniquely suited to PvE gaming. As an upgraded version of the Raven, the Golem is probably the best Marauder. Though the others do have a very good ability to PvE as well. It has a very strong tank. It has a fantastic slot layout, and it works great in that mode. It also has a very large cargo bay, if I remember correctly. 1,200 cubic meters of cargo space in a battleship that is very large, which also makes it well suited for PvE. Regarding PvP Marauders, Marauders have an extremely low sensor strength, and as such they are very easy to jam. A Griffin could easily jam any of the Marauders. But despite that, the Amar Paladins do have a role in PvP. It is limited, but they can be extremely effective in the right hands. All Marauders have bonuses to tanking at damage output. So while they in theory would be good for PvP, the things needed to make them fantastic in PvE also makes them slightly less good in PvP. No, not a Disco Paladin. No smart bombs. If that's what you mean by Disco. No, if you want to make a Disco anything, you use a Armageddon. An Armageddon. The reason you use an Armageddon instead of a rock is that an Armageddon costs one-third and can fit just as many smart bombs. But if your goal is a fleet ambush but with a smart bombing fleet, sure, the rock will be good since it has can fit a much better tank than an Armageddon. for that purpose, sure, a rock is good for a disco situation as well. It will work fine, but since you will most likely you lose any disco ship, I prefer the Armageddon. Right, that was a bit of a sidetrack. Moving on, we get to the Widow, which is a Black Ops ship. Now I will, as I usually do, point out that I have not flown Black Ops, as I Black Ops ships and Tech Free ships are the only ships I haven't flown aside from Titans. So take my info with that in mind. Well, Black Ops ships, battleships, are designed to create covert ops Sino jump bridges. That is another covert ops ships fires a covert ops Sino, which is not a normal Sino, but a covert ops Sino, and the Widow can then open a jump bridge from its system to the system the covert ops Sino is in, and allow all of the covert ops ships to jump through it, thereby avoiding any gate camps in between the two systems. This can be used to launch some very effective strikes behind enemy lines, but it is a very limited style of play. It can be effective, but it isn't widely used. Aside from that, the Widow also has the ECM jamming bonuses of the Scorpion. Since Black Ops battleships are mainly used for their ability to open these jump bridges, then no, there isn't any real difference. But if you look at the combat bonuses, there is large differences between them. But for the price of a Black Ops battleship, for the role intended, I wouldn't really go into a combat situation with them. They can be a slight boost to a recon fleet, but you can't warp cloaked in it, and as such, it is more dangerous to fly around in it behind enemy lines. So open covert signals. Then log off and log on your own combat character. That would be my suggestion. Change ship. This leaves us with the T2 transports. Basically they are the Bustard and the Crane, and they are an upgraded version of the Badger series. The Bustard is a deep space transport. Designed to get through enemy territory by a tanking bonus and two built-in warped stabilizers. I don't much favor that kind of transporting in enemy space, and as most people do, they prefer the Crane, which is a blockade runner. The difference between them is that the blockade runners can fit and use a covert ops cloaking device, thereby being able to warp cloaked, which is a huge benefit in hostile space. Since you can't be, you're very unlikely to be targeted or tackled by an enemy, that is far more preferable than being able to tank incoming damage when you are tackled. Usnami, the Widow cannot warp cloaked. Can the Crane use covered up jump bridges? Oh, you're testing my knowledge. I want to say yes, but I haven't actually heard anyone mention it, so it probably can't. Yes, it would be awesome. But that would defeat the purpose of sort of. Well, you don't need to go through jump bridges to be safe in a Crane. Warp and cloaked is more than enough safety, unless you jump into a large mobile warp disruption bubble. This leaves us with tech-free ships. And as I just said earlier with Widow, I have not flown any tech-free ships yet. The Tengu is, as all Kildare ships, Probably the best in any PvE situation. In my mind, the Tengu is the best tech free ship in PvE. But once in for PvP, the negative side of shield of missile ships, unless in huge numbers, does leave the Tengu somewhat behind the other three tech free ships in PvP ability. The main thing about T3 ships is that T3 ships are modular ships, and as such, you need to fit a different kind of modules to actually configure the ship with the bonuses you want. So if you want E-War ability, you fit one module for the... And if you want to warp cloak, you fit another. If you want to be immune to warp disruptions in zero space, you fit another, a third kind. There are five types of subsystems for T3 ships: propulsion, offensive, arrest, engineering, and so on. It is basically a way to customize the ship you want for the situation you are in right now. And as such, T3 ships can be extremely effective, but if caught in the wrong setup at the wrong time, almost can be just as much dead meat as any other ship. The main difference between them, aside from subsystems, is that if you get blown up in a T3 ship, you will lose skill points. At least there's a very high chance of losing skill points. That is the main downside of T3 ships. But then you randomly lose one skill, one level. But to make up for this, CCP designed these skills to be level 1 skills, and as such, they are all easily trainable in an extremely short amount of time. Yes, only subsystem skills can be lost. You can't lose leadership skills or gunnery, but it is a drawback, and you should be aware of if you ever think of going into T3 ships. If you are interested in T3 ships, I had a guest lecturer on this subject. I think it was 2 weeks ago, which is up on the class library on the wiki. So go give that a listen if you're interested. And yes, you can lose skills also without flying a T3 ship, but that's because you didn't upgrade your clone, Ellen. I am not sure if you only lose a level of a skill in the race of ship you are actually flying, or if it's random between all subsystem skills. I'm afraid I can't answer that question. But T3 ships are extremely cool ships. They have a lot of uses, but they are expensive, and they have the drawback of potential skill loss. Moving on, we get to the Kaldari faction ships. There are five Kaldari faction ships. There is the Kaldari Navy hook bill, the Caracal Navy issue, the Osprey Navy issue, the Raven Navy issue, and the Scorpion Navy issue. The main point of the Navy ships is that they have about a 20% increase in shield, armor, hull, HP, and other basics, stats, attributes. They also have a better slot layout, and they all focused towards bonuses of damage. So while the normal Osprey is a logistics and mining ship, the Navy Osprey is a combat ship. The same with the Scorpion, which normally is a ECM ship. And the Navy version is focused towards actual damage and tank. The Raven Navy issue has always been very popular with mission runners, since it requires a low amount of skills to fly it and use it properly, while still having an increased damage output because of its the ability to fit one more launcher than the normal Raven. The Scorpion, while not normally seen as a mission runner, the Navy Scorpion, it does fairly well due to the tanking bonus with towards resistances and a very large shield tank ability, probably the largest tanking ability of any subcapital ship, or easily among the best tanked battleships. There is, to my knowledge, only one rare or unique Kaldari ship, and that is the Raven State Issue. They were originally called the Corvus, and were handed out as a prize for the third Alliance tournament that was finished in December of 2006. There are four of them, at least to my knowledge, four of them still alive, and there's only been four. And they were awarded to the Band of Brothers Alliance, which these days is called IT. There's only ever been one sold, and my data tells me it was sold for 200 billion ISK. So unique ships are extremely expensive, and if they ever are on auction, I believe it would be at least 400 or 500 billion if one was sold today. Yeah, it was sold for 200 billion for almost 4 years ago. These days, it would be at least twice that amount. Yes, you might think that it's a waste of money, and you can never actually fly it, because as soon as somebody sees it in space, they will form a gang squad and kill you just to get the kill mill. But as such, they are unique ships are all museum pieces, and there are collectors that want them simply to have them. That doesn't mean it isn't a good ship. It's a fantastic ship, but you wouldn't survive undocked more than half an hour. And moving on, we get to capital ships. There are six Kaldari capital ships. There are two freighters and four combat capital ships. On the freighters, there is the Charon and the jump freighter Rhea. Basically, they are just designed to haul very large amounts of goods. I believe the fully skilled Charon pilot can haul 900,000 cubic meters of goods. The jump freighter, which the name suggests, has the ability to jump to Sanosaurus fields. As such, jump freighters are the backbone of all commerce and trade in zero-zero space, simply because it's easier and it's safer to transport it this way. Moving on to the combat ships, there is the Chimera Carrier, the Y1 Supercarrier, the Phoenix Dreadnought, and the Leviathan Titan. And I have to point out now that I am not a fan of Kaldari combat capital ships. I've been telling people not to train them for 4 years, and people still train them. While on paper, they look similar to all the other ships. The nature of shield ships does mean that they are at a disadvantage in 0-0 capital PvP. Basically, carriers are very large logistics ships they can repair up to three times as much HP as a logistics ship, and with a triage module can repair upwards of 16,000 DPS. The supercarrier Wyvern, on the other hand, is designed more towards a direct damage role, and with the use of fighter bombers, a Wyvern can output about 8,000 DPS. All supercarriers like the Wyvern are immune to all kinds of electronic warfare. Is on ECM, sensor dampening, tackling, and so on. Aside from bubbles and targeted warp disruption by a heavy interceptor. The Phoenix is a dreadnought, and the main role of dreadnoughts is to siege player-owned star bases, the POSs, or other attack other capital ships. The Phoenix uses missiles, as all on almost all Kaldari ships do, and this means that it takes a long time for the missiles to actually land, and this means that in PvP situations, the other dreadnoughts can put on the damage much more quickly than the Phoenix, which does mean that it loses a lot of DPS, since many times the target is actually dead or not on grid anymore by the time the missiles get to the location. Yes, Phoenixes therefore often shoot the secondary target, not the primary target, for this reason. All dreadnoughts can output about 5,000 to 6,000 DPS. Last up is the Leviathan. The Leviathan is a Titan. These days, Titans are mainly used for their remote jump bridge capability. That is, they can open a jump bridge through which an entire fleet can jump to a Sino in a distant system. I believe the jump range is about 7.5 light years. Yeah, it allows an entire fleet of sub-capital ships to jump to a sensor field through the Titan's jump bridge. Which, this way, an entire support fleet can follow a capital fleet around as long as you have a Titan opening bridges. In the old days, on the other hand, Titans were mainly used for their Doomsday device. That is, their Doomsday was a 250-kilometer range AOE smart bomb that did upwards of 74,000 DPS damage instantly. As such, the Titans were very dangerous in zero-zero space, and many fleets were simply one-shotted by Titans. Okay, I think that is the end of the lecture bit. So let's open up for questions. I see they are already starting. Which Kaldari ship to use for level 5 missions? You could do it in a Tengu probably, but a Golem would probably also be able to do it. Though it is just at the limit of a single sub-capital ship to run level 5 missions. As such, you often see carriers or motherships doing it in low-sec if they think they can get away with it. Any other questions? No, pirate ships aren't usually talked about. But if you have a specific question towards pirates, give it a go. Regarding Kaldari owns, I'm not sure I would agree. Kaldari is by far the best PvE race, but their capital ships are lacking, and their T2 ships and battleships are very, very specialized, and are often to the detriment of their actual stream use. You do see enormous drakes around, but that's not because drakes are good, but because drakes are easy to get into. No, that's actually not true, Lerany. I was a very big fan of Kaldari ships my first years in EVE, and flew mainly ECM boats for half a year, just when I started. If I had to pick between capital ships, I would pick the Amar race for anything, all of them, for carrier and for dreadnought, I'd pick Amar, and for super carrier, I'd pick Galenti, because the Galenti bonus to damage means that the Nyx has an output of 10,000 DPS, while the others only have 8,000. the Knicks is extremely fun to fly, but I sold mine because I felt it was simply too lame a gameplay time. The best PvE race, that is a much more difficult question to answer than it is to ask. PvP in EVE isn't one thing. There are slow and heavy fleets, there are fast and nimble fleets, there are denial fleets, there are sniping fleets, and as such, every race in EVE does have a role in PvP and does excel in one type of combat or multiple types of combat. But my own personal preference is Minmatar for roaming fleets, since that's the main way I do combat. Minmatar for roaming, Amar for logistics. And yes, I can fly and have flown all ships except for Black Ops, T3, and Titans. They all races do have a role. They can be used in PvP, all of them. It's just you have to identify what is the best ship for this role that are going out to fight this time, today, now. But there isn't a general best. If there was, it would be boring as shit. And also that there is the reoccurring theme from CCP of nerfing what is perceived of as best, making a new best. So there's always a continual cycle of nerf and boost that creates new bests for new situations all the time. But yeah, but the current worst race is by far Galenti. Yes. They do have bright moments, of course. The Ishtar is a good ship, but all the ships that rely on blasters are fairly weak, except for maybe the battleships and battlecruisers to some extent. Kerestan, I don't actually believe that CCP has ever had a tendency to overbuff anything. If anything, they always underbuff, and then at least they tend to claim that they revisit and rebalance accordingly over time. Yes, the Tyrannus is also a high point in the Galenti lineup. The Eraso was very good, but then they nerfed sensor dampeners. Once upon a time, you could actually go roam 00 space solo in Eraso and expect to actually do fairly well. But that's, you can't do it anymore. Any other questions? Really? No other questions? No. Counting down. 3, 2, 1. Okay, thank you everyone for the class. I very much appreciate any feedback you give me. Feedback is the only way of improving classes, so if you think I did something extremely bad or extremely well, please let me know. 4 PM or Eve mail. We do read all of it, and we do consider all of it, and it is of great use to us to know what you actually feel think about our classes. So do give feedback, please.